Hi, this is Patti LuPone.
This is Allison Janney.
This is Matt Ballmer.
This is Donna Murphy.
This is Nia Vardalos.
This is Jesse Tyler Ferguson.
This is Beanie Feldstein.
I'm Octavia Spencer.
This is Ben Platt, and you're listening to Little Known Facts with my favorite person on the planet, Alana Levine.
A-OK.
Welcome to Little Known Facts, a podcast where you will hear unfiltered, raw, honest, and uniquely funny interviews with artists you love as they talk about the art they love to make. I'm your host, Ilana Levine.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow wherever you are. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Hey, I heard you needed inspiration. He's Alana and friends with some revelations. Little known back to the day. Every little thing's gonna be A-OK.
Everyone, welcome to Little Known Facts. I am here to say that this is my 100th episode. I'm so thrilled that I can say that. It has been an amazing adventure. And before I share my guest today, Matthew Broderick, who came on the podcast as part of a live event that we did together with proceeds going to an incredible organization called the Trevor Project, I just want to take a minute to say thank you. And there are a few people in particular that I really want to say thank you to. First and foremost, Chad Dugatz. It is Chad who records every episode with me, listens to the edit, does the edit with me, and has really shepherded this through from day one. I started out as a lover of podcasts, but literally as someone who had no idea how to even begin. And the reason I'm at 100 is because of Hangar Studios and Chad Dugatz. So I just have to say that out loud for all the world to hear. I also want to thank Dawn Andrews and Christopher Henke and other friends of mine who from day one were like, you could do this. John Slattery, who was my very first guest, and because he came on, well, it was really easy to get the following 99. Ben Platt and Beanie Feldstein and all of my guests who have come on this show, friends who have not only given me their time to sit in the podcast booth with me and share stories they've never shared before, but the way in which they so generously talked about my podcast in the community at large. I will never know how to say thank you properly, but today is an opportunity to say thank you. My parents, of course, my siblings, my beautiful husband, Dominic Famusa, my kids, Georgia and Caleb, all of whom have kind of made this a family business in some way with their support and their love and their enthusiasm. But mostly, all of you. It is now 100 episodes later, and the friends I've made through this podcast, well, that was just a gift I never expected. So thank you, not just for listening and sharing the podcast and giving me encouragement to keep going, but thank you for being the kindest, most generous, inspirational people on every level. So with all that, little known fact about my guest today, even though he has been one of the most prolific movie stars on the planet for over three decades, he is constantly returning to his first love, the theater. And for that, I am unbelievably grateful. Welcome, Matthew Broderick, to the podcast.
A-OK. A-OK.
Welcome, everyone, to Little Known Facts. This is my first live podcast event, and I have to say, other than my family who is here tonight, Matthew is probably someone I've known the longest of everybody in this room, which is kind of extraordinary.
Yeah, how long has it been?
Well, it feels, I don't know, it's been like 25 years.
Yeah, at least, yeah.
Do you think that's true?
Yeah, it's absolutely true. I think it might be more.
That would be impossible. How could it be more than that?
No,
what are you
I'm
talking
sorry.
About? I have two things I want to say, but will you tell the joke that you just told me backstage that your castmate told you?
Okay. I only just heard it, so
I
hope that I get it right. It's a mad cow, you know, when there was mad cow disease. Anybody remember that? So two cows are in a field, and one of the cows says, "Are you worried about this mad cow thing?" And the other one says, "No, I'm a giraffe."
I totally got it the first time. Before we begin, I want to say two things. One, many of you are aware that the reason Matthew and I are here tonight, aside from being so honored to be a part of NYC PodFest, is all of the proceeds from tonight are going to an organization that we both admire so much called the Trevor Project. They are there to support LGBTQ kids all over the country, and I just think they're extraordinary, and you can look on their website when you get home tonight, and you'll see why I dragged you out. You'll be home in time for Homeland, but... And the other thing is that by the time this episode airs, it will be my 100th, which is kind of an amazing thing, so...
Congratulations.
Thank you. And I want to thank my friend Mike Canzanero is out here somewhere, and it's because of him and ProMedia and Hanger Studios that all of this is happening. But enough about celebrating me.
That's amazing.
It is amazing.
How many podcasts did it take to get to the 100th?
It took 77 podcasts to get to 100. It's crazy.
That's very quick, actually quick way to get to 100. That's
yeah, you
good.
Skip.
Yeah.
You skip some.
Yeah.
The thing that is really remarkable is that what most of you don't know is like 25 minutes ago, Matthew was on stage at the Irish Rep in a play called The Seafarer. And I just want to say, and I don't mean to embarrass you, but you're notoriously late for everything. And
thank you.
You're welcome. So the idea that you are here, not only were you on time, but you were early.
I was kind of early, yeah, and thank you for the mixed nuts and Pringles, water, and...
Doritos.
Cheetos.
All Costco delicious items. Anyway, he plays a character who is... I was thinking how when I need an Irish accent... Do you guys know the Lucky Charms commercial? Like, they're magically delicious. Is that what you did to get your Irish accent so perfect?
That's how where I started, and then, honestly, they have a very good teacher there at the Irish Rep because they run into this a lot. So
people coming in with like, I got this.
Yeah,
green clovers.
Yeah,
orange. Yeah,
yeah. And but his name is Stephen Gabus.
Shout out to Stephen.
Shout out. Yeah, and I think he's available.
That's great.
You need an accent. He can do anything.
I love that. I love
accents. He sent me accent. He sends you tapes of people that are similar, or he'll read the part for you and then send you a file.
Do you find that you're doing the
yes.
play the way he?
I do. The other play I did there, I won an Obie Award, which sounds like I'm.
Well, it sounds like he won an Obie Award.
Well, yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yes, because yeah. I'll say this. I learned the accent from him, and I never changed any of his readings ever. So it was just his performance with my face.
I feel like that is like a life lesson.
It is, and I don't know what the lesson is in it, but it is one.
I was thinking how, so Matthew, and maybe there are more of you out there, is half Irish and half Jewish. Is anyone else here half Irish and half Jewish? Yeah. Mm. So you, it's kind of an amazing
it's
combination.
Tough, huh? It's rough.
Because I was thinking how he played Leo Bloom in The Producers, who's kind of a quintessential, what a quintessential.
it's one of those new genders, quintessential. Quintessential.
He played Leo Bloom in The Producers, which I'm sure you have seen, and he was hilarious. And he's now playing this really quintessential Irish character in this play. And it reminded me of the fact that you've had this kind of dual life. You grew up in New York City.
Yep.
Your mom was Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
Your dad, the magnificent actor, James Broderick, was of Irish descent.
Yep.
And you grew up going to Ireland as a kid, right? Is that right?
Yeah, no, that's correct. About 10 years old, my parents bought a place there or maybe even a little earlier than that. And we spent summers there.
And do you still spend time there?
Yeah, sometimes. I haven't been there in a little while, but my sisters do, and I do, and all their kids do, and everybody goes there all the time. We got a house that we all share.
That's really nice. And so tonight, like, there may be a lucky winner, right, who gets to go.
Who gets to stay in my house. Yeah, sure. As long as I'm not there, it's fine.
It's great.
Yeah.
I think that I'm going to venture a guess that everyone here is familiar with Ferris Bueller. Is that a fair guess? And it's very exciting because there are my children and their friends are in
Which
the audience tonight. That's Georgia. That's
Hi.
Caleb.
Hello.
There's their friend Dylan right
imagine
there.
Imagine that. Yeah.
Can you imagine that? Remember we talked about my kids? There they are. That
unbelievable.
Big. It's unbelievable. And I was thinking about how that film is 30 years old at this point.
I know.
And it's probably something you still get recognized for. Is that true?
Yeah. I mean, I get asked about it a lot. And yeah, it still seems to be in people's minds 30 years later, which is amazing.
It feels so fresh to us because we all see it and we've seen it so recently. Do you remember filming that movie? Do you have real memories of it? Did someone give you an accent and then you went in and did the performance with? No, because in all honesty, you were 23.
Something like that.
Such a confident performance. Like that's such a confident performance.
Yeah. Well, I didn't feel so confident. I mean, I remember very well making it. I had done like Brighton Beach and Biloxi Blues on Broadway, and for a year each, I'd done War Games. So I was young, but I had done some.
You did a film or two. Before.
Yeah, two films, I guess. Three.
Well, one stopped because the director died mid filming, right?
He didn't die, but he was too sick to continue.
Okay. But is he dead now?
Oh yeah, he died. Yeah.
So he died.
If he hadn't died, yeah, you're right. I shouldn't have doubted you. If he hadn't died, I would have been pissed off because they stopped the movie because he was so sick. So
right.
I was like, well, he better die.
He better die.
He did die. And he died.
Yeah.
But when I made.
But I digress.
Oh yes.
What were you saying?
I don't remember.
Ferris Bueller.
Yes.
I thought it was a very confident performance.
Yes, thank you. It was. But, you know, it looks that way. You know, John Hughes directed it and wrote it. And he was like the king of teen movies at that time. Like they would call him the Spielberg of that genre.
Hmm.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. Little known fact.
And I could tell because it's always good when you see this. Hmm. Yeah.
No, I mean, none of us knew that, so that's amazing.
But anyway, he was quite particular about stuff, so, you know, it wasn't like I was totally confident, but in a way, I always, I think when I was young, I was more confident, if that's possible. Like, now I'm more, I might just remember it wrong, but do you ever think when you were young, you weren't as self-conscious and you were braver? Do you ever, you're allowed to answer questions.
I want to be thoughtful about that because there are parts of my youth I remember like with tremendous clarity and mm-hmm. then great, great expanses of blackness.
Sure.
I would say I was very spontaneous and daring.
Right.
And I was not self-conscious.
Right.
But also wasn't worried about consequences,
I guess that's a little what I mean. You know, when I did that movie, I was like, well, here I am, starring in a movie. I've barely ever done that before.
Right. But when you have like a towel on your head and you're in the bathroom, like talk about that scene, the shower scene, and you make that cute hairdo.
The hairdo came about, I think it was that was me.
Confident you.
Yeah, there was, and also, you know, I'm shooting all day in a shower trying to think of
funny
things.
Shtick, yeah.
So I put my hair up like that. And then, but this is what, you know, what's so good sometimes in movies is then the director, John, likes that. And then then the hair guy comes and makes it like amazing.
Right.
So, but it might have been my idea, but he knew enough to say that's good and make that better. And, The towel on the head was definitely all my idea. I remember that because that's how my sisters would come out of the shower in my boyhood. I have two sisters.
Yeah.
And they always seem to have a towel up like that. So that's what I do.
Do you
home.
Still do that?
No. My hair's short and old, and I just wipe it. I can't see it. You know, I can't see my hair anymore.
Well, speaking of bathrooms.
Yeah, bathrooms.
We were remembering, like, so the reason we know each other.
Yes.
Is because, well, okay. There's a wonderful writer named Kenny Lonergan. He recently wrote a movie called Manchester by the Sea.
Yep.
He won a lot of fancy awards
for
that. Matthew's in that movie. Matthew is in most of the things that Kenny has done in a small way or a big way, because Matthew and Kenny Lonergan grew up together mm-hmm. in New York City,
yep.
went to school together,
yep.
and were great friends. I was asked to be in a reading of a play that Kenny Lonergan wrote. Really, it was 30 years ago, whatever. I was 10. It was a miraculous thing. They needed a 10-year-old. And Matthew and Helen Hunt were in this play reading. It was called Judith. I went to LA. I became roommates with Helen Hunt. Matthew would come out to visit. We became great friends. And we were just remembering that one night, Jeff Goldblum, Gina Davis invite. This was a big deal for me. I was not Matthew Broderick. I had not been in War Games. Every time I met a person, I was like, what is happening? So I was in Gina Davis and Jeff Goldblum's house. They're two of the really tallest people on the planet. Would you agree?
I would absolutely agree.
And they're like, do you want to come play Jenga? And we were like, yes. Yes, we
yeah,
do.
And to them, Jenga is like a teeny little game. Okay. Yeah.
Like when you're in an airplane and you look down yeah. and you see a city, that's
yeah.
what everything looks like to them.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like it looked like the travel edition of Jenga, actually. Yeah.
And then I had to go to the bathroom. I'm sorry. It's just that I saw him backstage and I had not thought about this in, all right, 60 years.
Yeah.
It's been 60 years. And I went into a bathroom, and the entire bathroom was their cat's bathroom, and it was like covered with kitty litter and a white picket fence. And I thought, that's amazing. But then tell them about the bedroom.
Yeah.
They gave us a tour.
They did give us a tour, and they had a bed which was, I think it was two California Kings that had been specially made attached to each other.
Yeah, maybe more.
Maybe more.
Like, and the whole room was a bed.
Drew. And they had sheets made. I hope they're not going to be... Boy, I wouldn't want either of them mad at me.
No, I wouldn't either.
The sheets were made, so it really looked like a normal bed, except it was huge.
Yeah.
Of course, not when they were lying on
not
it.
Not for
it
them.
Normal. But yeah. They were very in love, though.
They were so in love.
Yeah.
The thing that's amazing, though, all these years later, is that Gina Davis has gone on to become one of the most vocal activists for gender equality and women's equality in the business. She's been instrumental in, I think, like educating television execs to make sure that women are represented in high-powered jobs on television, among other places. Anyway, I wish I could go back in time and thank her for everything she's ended up doing for all of us. But anyway, what I wanted to ask you on another subject completely, because you're in this play right now,
yes.
I find it remarkable because you're one of the only, and I'm going to call you a movie star, a bona fide movie star. I'm going to call you that, and
okay.
you can take it or reject it.
All right. Okay.
Is it on? You come back to the theater over and over again, and I really cannot think of anyone else who has the film opportunities that you have, that does as many plays that you do, unless
right.
you want to. Do you know anybody?
I don't know.
Nobody.
No, I don't. Yeah.
And I think that is a remarkable thing and something I admire about you so much. Oh. And I'm wondering, the play that I just saw, and there's such an amazing turn of events that I, spoiler alert, which is such a trendy, no one said that
yeah.
years ago when I was
I
young, but spoiler alert,
that. Yeah.
I don't even know where that came from. So I'm not going to tell you what the spoiler alert is, but there's a twist that's really shocking. Why did you choose that play, and how do you choose what you do?
Well, it's different all the time, but the play is written by a writer named Connor McPherson, and I did another play of his 2 years ago called Shining City, and I really enjoyed it. And it's a very small theater, and smaller, I think, than I've ever worked in. And it's kind of fun because the audience is about, it's about this size, honestly. I wanted to do that play. I like that writer. I read the play, and what happens very often is everybody thinks, why did you want this particular thing? But more often the truth is you have a time, you're not doing anything, and it's got some elements that are good and some that you don't know if they're good, and you think maybe it would be good though, and I might, like, let me see how that is, which is not to say anything's wrong with it. But I don't always, it's not like I say, I want to exactly do this, and then I'm going to do that. And then I sort of, I have a feeling that I should do it, and then I do it, and hope that once I start doing it, I will know why I'm doing it.
And has that revealed, yes, I think that's true in marriage.
Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of times, you know, when you, in food that you order in the restaurant, I hope this is good. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know which to get, but I'm going to get that. Yeah.
Right. I get you.
What are you getting? You know?
Right.
What are you eating? What
That's
are you eating?
That's a good question. Do you wait to order until you hear what everyone else has ordered?
If I can, I would much prefer to know what everybody is getting. Yes. Nobody likes to go first.
For anything?
No.
No.
Except like getting in a lifeboat or something. That's good. A lot of people want to go first. Yeah.
Touché.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Do you feel like you're in a lifeboat right now?
Yeah, no, I'm
terrified.
Yeah.
Terrified.
No, I'm still on that big boat with the hole in it.
Yeah, you are. It's so different doing it in front of a live audience,
I know,
isn't it?
I know. I have a deranged desire to be appealing.
I think it's working. Would you agree? It's working.
I think I shouldn't have said deranged.
Deranged.
Yeah, a deranged desire. That makes it sound not
mad
good.
Mad cow disease. So when you started out, I would imagine you had a very different strategy than the one you just described, which is there's a hole in my schedule. This thing came to me. There are enough elements. When you started out, like, I don't know, because we're older than everyone in this room, Matthew,
yeah,
they don't know the Neil Simon trilogy of plays,
right,
possibly.
Mm-hmm.
But those plays were centered around a character named Eugene, who really was Neil Simon,
yeah,
as a child. And Neil Simon is this extraordinary comedy writer. He started in theater and sketch comedy. And The Odd Couple is a movie that he wrote and a TV show that he wrote. And then it was revamped again.
Yeah.
But there was a lot of Matthew being incredibly funny and charming, World War II era direct address to the audience,
yes,
where this character would talk. He would leave the story of and the family and kind of walk to the edge of the stage and explain a little bit about what was going on.
Exactly.
And so Ferris Bueller does that too.
Yes.
And so I wonder if earlier in your career you tried to be strategic, like, okay, I've done that kind of part, now,
yes,
I'm gonna do a different kind of part,
I
and show
did
them my complexity.
Yeah, no, you know, it's very tricky. That's the thing, particularly when you're starting, because when you start, you just audition for everything and
pray.
Hopefully somebody gives you a part.
Yeah.
So there's no decisions to make. There's just like, okay, I'll go there because I got that part.
When you started, did you think you'd do this your whole life?
No.
So
I really didn't. I thought it was like a way to not go to college for a year.
Great.
Honestly, and then
this was your gap year, and it's gone on for,
right,
30 years.
Yes, and even still, I'm sometimes like, wait a minute, I didn't really mean to be a lifelong actor,
mm-hmm,
to tell you the truth, but I, you know, it's way too late to do anything.
Yeah. Do you have other skills?
No, that's the other, another problem.
Yeah.
But Yeah, after I did the Neil Simon plays, and then Ferris Bueller came along, to tell you the truth, I was like, no, I don't want, I've been talking to the audience for 2 years, and that's all I'm going to ever do then, you know, I need a real part, I don't want to, and I told my agent that, actually, right. And he was like, I'll see you tomorrow. He was in L.A. He was like, got on an airplane because he was afraid
you were
I was
so wrong.
He was afraid I was not going to do Ferris Bueller. And he
right.
was, it was literally like while I was complaining, there was a knock on the door and now there he was, you know. And he said, you know, I think you should really do it. And
what if he had like flippers on and like a yeah. mask? And he's like, whoa, sorry. Yeah, do you have a towel?
Smoke coming off of his body. And he was, no, he would have... He was not. He would not leave until I was like, "I'll, of course, yeah." And he
did
was
you
right.
not know, like John Hughes? It's not like he was an unknown. Like
oh, no,
all those other 16 Candles, Breakfast Club.
He did exactly. That's what he had done then.
But you were not so aware, or you were really worried
aware.
About the character.
I was a little bit aware. I hadn't actually. I think I might have seen Breakfast Club when it came out, but then. When the opportunity for Ferris Bueller came, I actually rented the VHS of the one about her birthday. What's that called? 16 Candles. And 16 I think that's all there was at that point was that and Breakfast Club.
Right. And then there was Ferris Bueller.
Right. And then Planes, Trains, and Automobiles and a whole bunch. But I rented those, watched them. And then I thought they were great. And the only interesting thing, the slightly interesting thing about that is, I hope I didn't already tell it, but...
Not tonight.
No, yeah. I rented them and I thought about it and finally decided to do it. And I was still in a play. It was in Biloxi Blues, I think. And I got a call from the doorman at the theater. I was in my dressing room, you know, halfway in my costume, or whatever, and they said, "Matthew, you have a phone call." That's what would happen in those days. And I came down the stairs, and you know, by the doorman, I picked up the phone. I said, "Yes." And they said, "This is the Texas something something. We're a collection agency. You rented 16 candles, and you owe." $3,200, $59. It's some incredible bill for these because I never thought to bring them back. Or and I remember they called me at the theater to say what did I intend to do about this? And I said, well, the movie's only worth $90. And they said, that doesn't matter. You rented it for that long. It could be worth nothing, but you still owe us $4,000, something like that.
Yeah.
And anyway, the ending is great because my accountant called them and negotiated. So I gave them the price of the tape and the tape. And they thought, oh, that's okay.
That seems fair. That seems more than fair.
I was pretty happy. Yeah, I was happy with that deal. And look at me now.
Did you know when you were... That movie was 30 years ago.
I know.
Okay? I'm just going to say that one more time.
Yeah.
Because...
Why?
You... because that will be the one of the first sentences of everything written about you forever.
When I die.
On your...
I know.
In your obituary.
Yeah.
Or on your tombstone, it might say, here lies...
I doubt that.
I guess my question is, did you realize at the time,
no.
was there any way to understand the lasting power of it?
No, nobody knows those things, you know? I mean, it was a movie like other movies. I was hopeful about it. And I loved, you know, Alan Ruck was a good friend. I mean, I loved making it. And I saw it and I was like, oh, that doesn't work. That's too bad. And... which I basically always, you know, think that. And then...
You're so shiny and positive.
I know. But I'm Jewish and you just
And Irish.
It. Yeah.
That is so much guilt.
Yes, I know.
Right?
Yeah, I know. And an exhibitionist.
Yeah.
So it's strange.
And I just also want to say, in the play that I am encouraging you to all go see, the amount of drinking that goes on. Did you ever do a rehearsal where you guys actually drank real drinks?
No, we didn't. We thought about it. I've heard of people doing that.
Yeah.
I think the amount
just
we drink in this play might kill us.
But,
that would be an interesting experiment. But I've heard what happens is it just gets very sloppy and slow and doesn't really work.
I only meant in rehearsal. I'm not
a proponent. Oh, no, that's all we would do.
Yeah, I mean, if anyone from Equity is here,
I'm somebody who wouldn't. The idea of being intoxicated and on stage is very unappealing to
me. It's intoxicating just to be on stage, isn't it?
It's plenty, I like immediately afterwards.
We were just in the green room here. Yeah, you don't have to tell me twice.
It's in my rider.
Of course it is.
Yeah.
He needed green M&Ms. What would be in your rider if you had one? What do you like to have?
Where?
Like if we were about you and I to do this at the Barclays, which I'm sure after today they're going to want us like Nichols and May styles.
Yeah, yeah.
They're going to want it. I mean,
you know,
what do you like?
Nothing. I mean, I like whatever. I'm like the same way I am. What are you getting? You know, I want whatever the I want.
Does she have Twizzlers?
I would want to know what was in your dressing room,
right?
And I'd be like, why don't I have Lay's potato chips? Yeah. I want that and.
Sorry, got there first.
Yeah.
So before we open it up to the audience, I would love for you guys to have some time to ask him questions. If you guys clap, if that's of interest to you. Okay.
Doesn't seem that interesting.
No. I'll keep going.
Okay.
Nice work if you can get it. Will you finish that? How does that go?
What?
Nice work if you can get it.
And if you get it,
right. Didn't you do that on Broadway?
I did.
Great.
Yeah, over a year.
And now it's gone.
No, it's not gone.
No, you could sing it right now.
Absolutely. Would you like to hear a, no, I'm just kidding. And there's a piano starts, you know, tinkling over there. Yeah.
Yes.
No.
So,
no, not,
I guess I
not
do.
Not gonna happen. No,
and I understand, it's not in your rider. Do you feel like, because you are so, like, I recognized you the minute you walked in today.
You did.
That's
great.
I knew it was you.
Yeah.
And I imagine a lot of people do who don't actually have a Jenga memory with you. Do you feel like you can relax when you leave your house? Are you yourself? Because you've been someone who people recognize for longer than you were alive before that was true. And that's kind of a unique thing. Right? Do you feel like yourself?
Well, I guess that is myself, you know, which is a very strange thing to realize. But I'm not as recognizable. I mean, I can sort of slip around pretty well. You know, I'm a person who doesn't particularly. I'm very used to it. You're right. There are a lot of huge advantages. I mean, being here and then really the only advantage is a good table at a restaurant. Other than that, there aren't really any, to be honest. But
that is it.
Yeah, that's it. No, I get to meet wonderful people and people don't bother me that much. I've been with people who are super famous and who have to basically hide.
Are you married to someone like that?
Yes. And that can be hard. But that's nice. She's so good at it and very kind. But if we're with our children and sometimes you don't want to be having a conversation about how much a show meant to somebody. Not that it's not wonderful.
Right.
It's just at that time you're not wanting to be doing that. So, and it's a little repetitive. But
right.
I hate people who complain about it.
Right.
Which I'm now sound like I'm doing.
Nope. I don't think you did. I asked.
Yeah.
But also I think it's interesting because Sarah, who was also on the podcast, reminded me that
she loves you.
I love her.
Good.
I'm sad she's not here.
I know you are. I'm sure everybody is, but those are the breaks.
Why do you think
I would have such different shoes on right now if Sarah were here.
Yeah, I like your shoes. I remember those shoes.
Yeah, they were yours. Oh. You gave me a bowling ball.
So fast. See how fast that is?
I'm really fast.
That is quick.
I also am so fast and have dementia at the same time. So this sometimes...
That's a good combination.
Perfect. What? You gave me a bowling ball.
Really? I gave you one?
You gave me a bowling ball because we used to go bowling a lot.
Yeah, and
you, that was so sweet
there.
Of you. We were so good at that. Sarah... I don't know where that is.
That bowling ball?
I think, yeah, that's sad that I don't have it anymore.
Yeah, I don't have whatever. I had one too.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's gone.
Oh, wow.
We can get more.
You got, there's more bowling balls when
yeah, let's go right
from.
Now and get a couple bowling balls.
Ball. Let's be like Oprah.
Everyone
gets a bowling ball in the audience tonight. Wait, see? It went away. There was a thought.
You had a thought.
She, Sarah, who I love as much as she loves me, reminded me that you guys got married like either right before or after Sex and the City shot. So, in fact, I think she had to tell Darren Star, like, I would love to do this job, but I'm actually getting married on this date. You had a secret wedding right near here.
That's true.
At the Angel Orange
Center. Yeah.
How did you pull that off?
We just... did it. I was shooting a movie too, but we scheduled it, and that was a period when we were very much not wanting any, we didn't want any press. We thought that would ruin it, and so
your relationship or your wedding?
The wedding.
Yeah.
So, you know, we made it, we went to a lot of trouble, like, you know, to, which now seems slightly silly to me. We should have just said you can't come in. But we were very secretive about it. And I have one lousy memory of that even. I was having to promote some movie at the time, and every interview I did, they were like, are you getting married? And I'd be like, nope. And now it was somebody who's like, you must tell me, just tell me vaguely. You don't have to say when, but is
right.
that? And I was like, I can't believe you keep asking me that. No. And I was getting married, I think, the next day. So I had to use this poor man, I can't remember his name, for the New York Post. And he wrote an article that was like, the rumors are crazy. Everybody's gone nuts. I just met
Did you
so
send
nice
him like
charming.
A piece of cake or something after as
I
an
did
apology?
Yeah. I did apologize.
Good.
I called him to
Good
apologize.
Man. Yeah.
And he said he had been extremely humiliated by it. And that people in the office made fun of him, and that he felt he was really upset and hurt by it.
That's
and
horrible.
I said, all right, well, anyway, I just, there you go.
How do you think I feel?
Yeah.
Say.
Well, I didn't have to say a fake sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'm really glad you married Sarah.
Oh, I am
and
too.
I know she's
but
glad.
I wish I hadn't lied to that poor gentleman.
I do
gentleman.
Too.
What
you
could I do?
You learned something. Nothing. You couldn't do anything. I would have done the same thing. So.
You, madam, have you a question? Anybody questions?
Did anyone ever lie? Has anyone ever lied, ever, in this audience?
Or somebody, I don't know.
Right there. Okay, I have a question for you. It's sort of about your rituals. I know that you've worked with Jack Lemmon, who was notorious before he would step out on stage, or once the director called action, he would always say, it's magic time. So right before you are about to walk on stage or act, what do you do?
Are you the kind of actor who is talking like Matthew right before they
yes,
call action?
Usually.
And then you say it's magic time.
Yeah, I don't say it's magic time, but there are scenes where I have to concentrate a little. But but usually, honestly, what I find is best for me is to I'm talking, make jokes, and then sort of you gradually find your way into the scene or
right.
the work part of it. So
right.
I'm the opposite. There's people who stand in a corner and, you know,
cut off their left foot for real.
And, yeah. And then they come on filled with something and you think, well, that's not that good.
That's not
yeah.
Good. That's like showy. That's showing off a little. Oh, yeah. I'm an actor.
Yeah.
Whatever.
I also don't really like when people warm up.
Like that?
Yeah, I don't like that. I don't like stretching.
No.
Because if anything, even if it does work, it's an unfair advantage over the other actors.
So if I were in The Seafarer with you, although there are no women in this play.
No.
Noted.
Yes.
What do you do like right before you come on?
Well, now I'm going to show how dishonest I am because I go up early, much earlier than I need to so that I can sit quietly. I do exactly the opposite of what I just said. And I listen to the play because I don't come on for the first 20 minutes. So I try to get into the vibe of the play kind of quietly before
like
I walk
frosted
on.
Frosted Lucky Charms, they're magically delicious.
Yes, I listen to that over and over again. Yeah.
No, I feel you.
But I do. So it's really not true. Sometimes it depends on the part. Some parts you can talk all the way up to it, and some parts you have to have a little quiet time.
Yeah. Well, let's have quiet time right now.
Okay.
We have 2 minutes and 45 seconds left.
What can we fill it with?
All right, the last thing we'll share, because it's just fantastic and it's never boring, is that when they did this movie, The Freshman, which I recommend to everybody, Marlon, my friend Marlon, was at the point where, and it in no way affects the final product, but he had an earpiece, and his assistant would read his lines to him. So what is that like when you are acting with someone who has, you know, someone else in their ear while you're talking to them?
Well, it's pretty much not noticeable. I mean, he gets his line, which you realize while he's pretending to listen to you, he's hearing his line. So the whole method acting thing starts to get a little like, oh, but he's not really paying any attention to me at all. But he is kind of. But then it would go wrong. He also have conversations with her.
The assistant.
The assistant who was giving him the lines. She could hear him. There's a special mic for her. She's in a room off. And, and he would get mad at her, whatever. And he would just be talking. He'd be sitting opposite him and he'd say, no, say the line while he's talking. Otherwise, there's a terrible pause. He finishes, then you start speaking my line, and there's this great gap. So you have to start speaking while he's speaking. You have a magazine in one hand and a ham sandwich in the other. Put them down. And take a letter to Nick Mancuso. And he just started asking for things, you know, and we're out of milk. Sorry, I haven't done stand-up in a long time.
No, but this was the best.
We're done?
I can't imagine doing this with anyone else this evening. This was so wonderful. I want to thank all of you for coming.
This was my pleasure. So much fun. Yeah, thank you.
You're great.
You're great.
No, you are.
All right. Thank you all for coming. Good night.
Clouds can make the wind blow. Bugs can make the grass grow. So, there you go. These are little known facts that now you know.
If you want more information about my guests, go to the website littleknownfactspodcast.com. I also wanted to tell you that there is now a new addition to the website. It is a button that says contributions. This podcast is a true labor of love, and I really, really want to keep doing it for a long time. So if you like listening as much as I love to do it, please feel free to contribute. It would mean the world to me. Also, on Twitter, you can find me at Alana Levine. Instagram is Little Known Facts Podcast. And on Facebook, Little Known Facts Podcast. You can also feel free to rate and review the show on the iTunes show page. This podcast is recorded at Hangar Studios in New York City. This episode was brought to you by Pro Media, located in Times Square. Pro Media offers both production and post-production services out of its beautiful studios in the heart of New York City. Pro Media, sound vision. Find out more at promedia.nyc.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.